Welcome to Two Bards, One Mic. Insert interesting music here.
I swear we're actually going to get music one of these days.
Nah.
And episode 101.
101.
You may have noticed that people were saying different things than they normally are, and that's because on this Two Bards, One Mic podcast, I have the distinct pleasure and honor of doing this without Andy. Not that that's a pleasure or an honor, but the honor and pleasure is that I get to have the opportunity to talk with Steve Wolbrecht. Yeah, so I'm done digging out of that hole. Or maybe I'm not. Welcome!
Thank you. Hey, thanks, Scott. Thanks thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
You bet. Yeah. We're down in Stevie's game room right now, / craft room?
Craft cave, yeah.
Craft cave, yes.
Yeah.
It is usually always game / craft.
Yep. Yep.
Somehow.
The dual purpose, yeah. Well, it's partially a means to share the space with my wife to, you know, to do that. And it works pretty well for, you know, gaming can get a little messy sometimes. So,
Easy cleanup.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, okay, great. Oh, we just need to hose that down? Oh, cool. Was that the rubber cement or was that the gore from, anyway. So.
Just squeegee that over into the drain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, we wanted to talk about, many of us have had the opportunity either on video or on Dead FM or whatever to thank everybody in support of the awesome Blu-ray Kickstarter that we had.
Oh my goodness, yes.
For Darkness Rising.
How amazing was that?
That was... Like, the people have spoken.
Yeah, a little bit. I think they shouted a little. Just, give me more stuff! Yeah, it's... Yeah. We heard you. We heard you loud and clear. That was great.
So, for that, you're obviously going through and working on audio stuff with that, but you shared some information with me earlier about the depth to which some of that is happening.
Oh, okay, yeah. So with the success of the Kickstarter, Don approached me and said, "Hey, Steve, can we do the soundtrack for this?" And it had been years since I had dug out the files, and we had lost a lot through a computer crash, a hard drive going kaputs, and back in the day, like we didn't have automatic backups and all that stuff, and we weren't really smart. I mean, we would burn some stuff to CD. I don't think DVDs were even being burnable at that point. I mean, it was, you know, this is 2004, then we were working on this, so. So I was able actually to piece together from Phil Price's computer, who did the audio for Darkness Rising, external hard drive that my brother and I used to exchange files, and my old computer that I was able to resuscitate a little bit. I was able to piece together every piece of music from the movie, and so was able to do that. The problem was that a lot of it was in like a really poor MP3 format. So... what I was able to do over this past month was get those into my my programs that I use now, and basically boost up the quality and add more filters and do some multiband compression and just really enhance this and like build it back up. So, along with doing that, I found that there were pieces from the original soundtrack that didn't sound good. Back in the day, from our lack of knowledge doing it and just using the new tools that were brand new to us, and I think the tools being kind of in their first or second generation, when we were trying to stretch or bend the choir singing, for example, that really just distorted the choir and just made them sound just bad. So I was able to find the original recordings that we got from the choir, and then using the new and better compression tools and understanding how to use them more, was able to, so I've gone through and rescored some of the pieces, some of the more important ones, the better ones, the fuller ones, mm-hmm. and have been able to use my newer sound package and samples, mm-hmm. the ones that I use for doing the Gamers 3 score.
Yeah.
So it sounds so much more beautiful and just full and stuff. So yeah, so the soundtrack is now done and will be sent off to replication here this week.
Sweet. So that is in 7.1 glory?
Yeah. No, but it's
just stereo. Okay.
But it's in 1600 hertz. I mean, it's CD quality now.
Yay!
Yeah, it's quite nice. So
yeah.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's good.
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
Me
too. This will finally see the light of day. This is very exciting.
And so we did mention the OST, correct?
Yes. Original soundtrack?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what's coming. Yes.
So we've got that, and then we've talked a little bit about the rescoring.
Yes.
And let's jump in and talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Technique and inspirations and all of that stuff.
Oh, sure.
That we put at the bottom of her list.
And move that to the top.
Excellent.
So it's
that's right, people. We're using the list today because Stevie's organized.
It's on a cocktail napkin, but you know, hey,
still
it
list.
Works, right? It works. Cool.
I've done CAD designs, huge things done on a cocktail napkin.
We can burn the evidence later too, and no one will know the wiser. Excellent. Okay.
Engineer, who needs a okay? Magic.
Oh, did we need that? Oh, well, okay. We'll just try it again. Anybody have a crayon? So, it has. This process has been eye-opening for me to look back and to see what I was doing 11 years ago, mm-hmm. score-wise. The musicality elements are there, and I can see those, but the inexperience with the tools has really, really come to the forefront. And after doing... Well, let's see, 4-5 major projects since then. It's like, oh, okay, you learn your craft, or you get out, but I would like to stay in, so we're trying to learn this here. So so it's been incredibly eye-opening to see just how far the knowledge has come, and to take an original sound file, music file from Darkness Rising, and to be like, wow, that just... Okay, that needs some sound compression, I need some multiband, and let's stereoize it, and let's put this here, and let's add some reverb, and then let's limit it, Oh, it sounds so much better! And to be able to do that in 5 minutes, where before, not even knowing what to do, and like I could be, you know, pressing buttons and tweaking stuff for an hour and not get anywhere.
Yep.
So that's been great. So, in contrast, where I'm able to look at the two... there was a scene in Gamers 3, the big kind of emotional high point. It's during Connor Marks's his patent scene where he's trying to get the crowd going.
And all the cards to rebuild,
right, trying to rally them. We need to do this, like you know, we need to come together. That scene, I was at the filming of that at Gen Con a couple years ago, and. During the filming, just feeling the energy of the crowd, Nathan Reiser over in the corner just going like, holy, like tearing up a little bit, very emotional. That, like, I started kind of hearing some little kind of themes and stuff, and I pulled out my phone and kind of hummed those in, and then got back that week. I came up with here is that theme. Mm-hmm. Here's what's going to do that. And so. That theme turned out to be very close, or I either patterned it off of or was inspired by the final scene of Braveheart. The big swell there at the end.
For the fight or for the disembowelment?
Okay. After the disembowelment, it's the buildup when they meet on the plains and they throw out the sword and then they all go charging and the big and then crescendo and all the strings come in and stuff. So And that's fitting because that was James Horner did that score, and we learned yesterday that he had passed away on Monday, I guess it was. So it struck me that even going back to even Darkness Rising and all the other stuff, like I've been very influenced by. James Horner is probably my biggest influence. Mm-hmm. In, Steven Spielberg being another. That the emotional highlight, the emotional high point of anything that I've scored, mm-hmm. patterns after what James Horner did is bittersweet to me, given that he had just recently departed us. Mm-hmm. So, but what I had done for that. So what I'd done for that scene then is the I guess what I've coined the ET technique, mm-hmm. which Steven Spielberg did. Towards the end of the movie, ET, they're all the police are closing in, they're riding their bikes, and then they soar, and then ET has them take off and they fly off, right? And you hear the dun dun da 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 dun dun, like huge swell music, mm-hmm. and everyone's like, whoa. What Steven Spielberg did is that throughout the movie, he interspersed that little theme just in little kind of notes, little motifs, mm-hmm. like motif, just kind of throughout the whole movie to introduce that to the audience so that they were familiar with it. Mm-hmm. So that when you hear it in its full glory, then you are connected to it and it has that much more of an emotional pull now, when that happens.
Spielberg crafted that?
I'm not sure if he crafted it, but that is one of the techniques that he uses. To do that, he introduces the theme a little bit beforehand so that you're familiar with it, and then
right. But that's Spielberg is that hands on with.
Oh, I'm sorry, not Spielberg. What am I saying? John Williams.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. Yes,
because I was
thank
like,
you.
Wow, that dude has every finger in every pie. I did not know that.
How many degrees does that dude have? No, my apologies. This would be the two kids with diarrhea upstairs. That right. would be that talking and the lack of sleep.
Okay.
So, no, John Williams. Yes, him being one of my influences, not Spielberg.
Okay.
And John Williams setting that up throughout the whole thing. Yes.
Yep. Yeah, because he does some of that here and there with Star Wars, too.
Absolutely.
You just hear little threads of the theme.
Oh, that was it. You can actually, if you just listen to the music, you can tell exactly what's going on screen.
Mm-hmm.
At the time when... No, I'm going to be... George Lucas did Star Wars, right?
When you said did, what do you mean?
Like, he filmed... that was his...
Yes.
He directed...
George Lucas wrote and directed A New Hope.
No.
And was the architect of Star Wars.
Perfect. Okay, cool. I just want to make sure
but
I'm getting my names.
There were many other writers, producers, directors.
Of course. It wasn't just him.
Now, who fucked it up, then, George? But anyway, we'll see if Abrams does any better.
Misa, hope so. So, the...
And Steve is no longer on the podcast. He's been Jar Jar'd.
When George Lucas came to John Williams, when he was like, hey, I want you to score this movie, and I want you to score it as an opera.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want you like this is a space opera. This is what this is, and the whole premise behind the whole thing about opera is that everyone has their own theme. I mean, it's the term is called leitmotif,
mm-hmm.
and so that's how John Williams scored it. So anytime Darth Vader comes on, you hear the Imperial March. Anytime the Rebels come on, you hear the Rebel theme. Like you know exactly what's going on,
mm-hmm.
throughout the whole movie. So yeah, and that is a big technique that I've taken too. Not so scoring three or four projects, not knowing that was a technique, and just like I just kind of do that because it makes sense,
mm-hmm.
and then looking like, oh, right, good call, guys. Okay, that's what I'm doing. Thank you for the inadvertent lesson because I now get what you're doing. Okay, good.
Yeah, I run into that all the time. I am so smart. Oh, it's been done before.
Oh, well, it's been okay.
I came to it all by myself.
I did
my own volition.
Yeah, it happens too. Yep. Right.
So question on that front, one of my pet peeves, but I won't lead the conversation too much.
Okay.
Do you know who scored There Will Be Blood?
I don't.
I don't either.
Okay.
I'm not going to look it up. Anyway, did you watch the movie?
There Will Be Blood.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yes, I did. Oil yes, Baron, I, all yes that. I actually I did see that. Yes.
For me, anything stand out? This may just be a horribly conceived notion on my part.
I will try to help you as best I can.
One of the things that I didn't like about that movie, in fact, that took me out of it,
okay,
was the score.
Oh, okay.
Because to me, it seemed to tell me, before it needed to, how I needed to feel about this scene.
Okay.
And I felt, for the first time, that that was really pandering, that that music was another, the co-star to Daniel Day-Lewis was the music, because it was so influential of...
Interesting.
You know, and I was like, I don't know if I'm just perverse or whatever, but I was like, no, I don't want to feel that way. I want to feel this way about this scene, and I didn't feel like I was allowed to.
And anytime your feelings disagreed with how the music was telling you needed to feel, that would set you off. That
yeah.
would, like, ah, there'd be friction and tension there. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or oh yeah, I feel sad because you told me to 5 minutes ago, and so now this whole thing, this revelation is not a revelation because it's not coming a mile away.
Right.
And I like asking people that question.
Sure.
I need to go back and watch it again. It's on Netflix, so I can.
Oh, there you go.
Without paying Daniel Day-Lewis too much money. I had a friend walk out 15 minutes into the movie. I think the first 10 minutes, there's not a line spoken.
Yeah.
So I was really upset that he made it that long. But he left the theater and said, I'm not going to be an actor anymore. Because Daniel Day-Lewis has done everything that I could possibly hope to imagine to do. And I was just like, he was good in My Left Foot, but Last of the Mohicans killed it for me and everything since then except Lincoln. I thought he was really good in Lincoln.
Yep.
But My Left Foot and Lincoln, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing in the middle. Gangs of New York, no. Last of the Mohicans, no matter what occurs. Sorry, nope, not going to say that in that time period. Yeah, there were a lot of things, but I just thought that since I have someone who composes things, which
right.
I would think that we would agree that you're not supposed to lead the audience, you're supposed to assist the audience.
I've had to learn to accept as one of my greatest compliments is when asked, how did you like the score? One of the best responses I can get is, I didn't notice.
Yeah.
I didn't notice. I'm like, and for a while that took a little bit to accept because I'm like, oh, but it's really good. Like it, but the thing is if it's really good, you're not going to notice it.
Right.
And that's the key is you're not going to feel that heavy handedness as you described. It's just going to just naturally, it's going to be a natural organic part of that. So, and there have been times where I've been too heavy-handed, and there probably are many instances throughout that, but only a few times that a director has come back and been like, "Hey, this just isn't working. Like, no, we were thinking more this for this."
I felt all the Flynn stuff was sublime. So well, on that, thank you very much.
Well, that was fun. Good.
But no, I think I understand because like in John Williams and all those, like you're talking about E.T. and Star Wars and those iconic type moments.
Yeah.
What I think I didn't like about There Will Be Blood was instead of riding the wave of seeing them riding the bike and feeling the tension and the cops are closing in and all this stuff and then the bikes lift off.
Yeah.
That theme isn't there.
Sure.
You're airborne. You're seeing them against the moon as that music starts to swell and then you feel it and it accentuates and you're surfing that wave of emotion that you're seeing and the sound.
Because John Williams has already brought you up to the water level as far as like, here's the theme, you know, so that you can ride with it. So you're on the same page. You're like with, yep, it's more familiar to you.
And There Will Be Blood is more like how I body surf, which is getting too far in front of the wave. It crashes over me. My head goes in the sand.
And it rolls
and then it just hurts the next day.
Why am I doing this? It's not even fun. Yeah.
So that was my thought. Thank you for going on that non sequitur tangent with me. But I just wanted to know if I was, you know, smoking too much ganja, which
no,
I don't do.
Well, it's
even though it's legal.
In this state. It is one of those learning curve things that I've had to pick up as far as like how heavy handed do you be, where, you know, where is finding that balance is difficult. And I've actually had one of my good friends, Chris Odie, actually came up to me a couple weeks ago and said, "Hey, I just have to say you're good. Your scoring is good." And I was like, "Oh, well, thanks. I know you've heard everything for the past 10 years. So where is this coming from?" And he just said, "Yeah, I just watched a couple movies that had really bad scores that just like it came on. I'm just like, I'm just upset because the music is so distracting right here." And I'm just like, "I've never felt that with any of your stuff." And I'm like, "You didn't notice, did you?" "Not really." I was like, "Perfect.
Yay.
Thank you. That's my compliment. Okay, there you go. There's my compliment." So yeah, no, I absolutely understand. Yeah. It's finding that line can be tough.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Cool. So next,
yes,
in our list of topics,
mm-hmm,
would be coming up next month, I think. I don't know because I'm not invited. Gen Con.
Yeah, they had to move it up
July
a couple weeks.
This year?
It's end of July into August. It's like July 28th into August 1st and stuff. So yes, yeah, I will be going again. As I've been going for the past number of years, to assist the Boy and Girl Scouts in obtaining their Gaming Merit Badge. So
nice.
Yes, working with the Scout program out there through Gen Con.
Did not know that I could have gotten. I need to be posthumously given for my Scout Sash the Gaming Merit Badge.
There you go. Right, like way to say, like I can. That would be something I could do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I put in my time.
I think it's technically called the Try It Badge, and it's for I work with the Brownie Scouts, mm-hmm, the younger girls, and it's they have to what I set up is that they have to try all these different games, all these different stations, and then they make up a game that then we play some of the games. So it's just kind of getting them into, hey, these are games, you can just make them up, you can do this. If you have a tennis court, what can you do with these lines? What could you play? This could be water. This could, you know. So it's just kind of getting them out there and trying some stuff. So
yeah.
But it's in essence kind of their Gaming Merit Badge. So yeah,
cool.
It's a very cool program.
Yeah, and you're out there for that, which takes place mostly.
It's over the 4 days. Our big days are Saturday and Sunday,
right,
mostly with the Scouts. But we also have some of the older Scouts come in Thursday and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do like the year that Twilight came out on a movie. A bunch of the older Girl Scouts, we rented out a movie theater, and then mm-hmm, they got to do gaming. They were doing, I think, Magic the Gathering, learning how to play Magic and stuff.
Okay.
And then they were going to watch the movie, and that kind of a late night thing. Watching the movie, and I had to chaperone. Okay, fine, great. And then when Edward comes on screen and collectively 25 girls swoon audibly,
mm-hmm,
I immediately went to my supervisor, Faith, can I go now? She's like, yes, thank you, and then I got to leave. It's like, okay, I'm good. But yeah, so. Yeah, but yeah, mainly Saturday and Sunday are the two big days.
Cool.
Yeah.
And other than that,
mm-hmm,
what are you doing at the Gen Cons?
At the Gen Cons,
I like to put S's on the S of everything, like Facebooks, the Twitters.
The Facebooks, the so stuffs.
It's the Gen Cons now?
Yeah, that's cool. The deers.
It's my thing, yeah.
That's kind of starting your trendy thing, so
yeah.
Nice.
I'm sure that's never been done before.
Hashtag S. you know, because you're adding S there,
yeah,
right?
It used to stand for Scott, and then it was sexy. Now it's sad.
We've come full circle.
Yes.
So, I'll be helping out the booth a little bit with Zoe and a gentleman, doing some of that stuff. Gamers Live will be happening Friday. I'll be in that again this year, like last year.
It's really Gamers Live anymore?
I don't know what else to call it. I mean, it's
now we get down to brass tacks, Steve. We're like, this is why you're on this podcast.
Oh, no. Okay. I was like, oh, sorry.
Ambush a guest.
Where did the spotlight come from, and why are my hands bound?
To Catch a Predator. Ambush a guest. I think that should be a new segment. We just bring people in. Hey, everything's up.
Where did you do that? Yeah, well, you waited 20 minutes. I would have done it in two, but that's cool.
Yeah. I wanted to get something on record. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm glad that they're still doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that'll, yeah.
Speaking of transitioning again.
Yes.
From the Gamers Live into, there's some other improv-y stuff that you're involved with.
Yes. Hat Trick Pony is an improv troupe that recently started up a couple months ago. It's a lot of the old Dead Gentleman folk, as well as some of the newer guys. Christian is the artistic director, Christian Doyle. And some other people from an Olympia improv troupe. We all kind of came together and we started doing shows. So yeah, we had our first show at our new venue at the Tacoma Youth Theater last Sunday. So we'll have another show on July 12th, second Sunday of July.
Oh, okay. So July you guys 12th. Will get one in before going down to Gen Con. Oh,
yep.
Nice.
Yep, yep. And I think that'll basically be the dress rehearsal for Gamers Live.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So is it like the second Sunday every month?
Second Sunday, yes. Okay. That's right. Yep. Second Sunday every month. $10 tickets. And yeah, it's a good time.
It's like a 90 minute? 60 minute, 90 minute?
Close to 2 hours.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, 90 plus. 90 plus. I mean, 120. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of in there and stuff. And we're setting up the technology here or the infrastructure here at this new theater because we were at another theater where we had that going, but we'll be able to take Patreon backers for Zombie Orpheus will be able to log in and watch the show live. We'll be streaming it live, and then we'll have a Twitter feed or something going on where people watching online can give us suggestions, and so they will have a part of the show and can be incorporated that way and feel like they're in, helping out and
nice
part. So yeah,
very cool.
It should be once we get all the kinks worked out. We're very excited to see how that will go. So yeah.
And
yes,
this is what happens after 101 podcasts. You start to figure things out. So because you're doing that improv,
right?
Unfortunately, another wonderful chapter of your extracurricular activities will be transitioning to a close.
It is, yes. So I have played in a rock band for the past, I think, 7 years or so.
Now, the iteration I remember,
yes,
and will always be, was Igneous Rocks, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we just rebranded because it's the main reason being is if you're trying to talk to a bar owner or someone and you're trying to say the band name and you're trying to say Igneous and they don't know how to spell that, don't know what you're saying.
Yep.
Kind of confused. We're like, hey, how about Rock Lab? Two one-syllable words one of them being rock, the other one being a three-letter. Rock Lab, that sounds good. So, what we focus on is the laboratory element of that, and it's basically like taking two songs and throwing them together and seeing what happens and stuff. So we do a lot of mashups. We do a lot of threading together songs and whatnot.
Kids these days are all about the mashing ups.
There you go. Right?
Yeah.
Seriously, the covers and everything. So it's a cover band, and we do the history of rock and roll, everything from Elvis and the Beatles to present day stuff. So, yeah, a ton of fun. So,
are Foo Fighters on the list?
Foo Fighters are not on the list. They're on the short list to add, though. I can tell you that.
Strike two.
Hey, we're still building the repertoire and stuff. Hey, it's always organic. We're always growing and learning. So, yeah, so I'll be playing. I left the band back in February to start the improv stuff, but they haven't been able to find a keyboard someone to replace me yet. So I said, well, okay, I'll play these next couple of gigs that are coming up. So so my last public gig is actually going to be this coming Sunday. We'll be playing The Taste of Tacoma at 3:00 in the Bowl Theater, the one right there in the front. Yep.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll already be there for a going away barbecue.
Oh, fun.
But hopefully I can peel off from that and come down and check you guys out at 3 and then go back.
Nice. Yeah.
That's my goal.
That's my goal. So, yeah. Ren from Journey Quest, Emily Rommel Shimkus. Okay. She is the she's the lead singer.
Like, Ren, hold it. There's a Calder. Oh yeah. Okay.
oh, that one.
Emily, okay. Right. Right. Yeah.
Yes, Emily. So, yeah, she's the female lead singer and stuff, and Don Neptune, the bassist, he played some stuff. He recorded some stuff for me for Gamers 3 soundtrack, so.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Peterson still drumming?
Yes.
Yep, okay. Yep,
that's right. Yeah.
Annie, Ryan?
Ryan had to leave. Ryan had to bow out. Yeah, his work schedule was getting too big.
Oh.
So, yep. Yep.
And then, it was right on the tip. Oh, Foo Fighters. The reason I was going to ask was,
right,
you had schooled me on the James Horner passing.
Yeah.
Nothing as tragic, but right. Did you hear the awesomeness that is David Grohl?
Is this the, I suffer an injury, I have a nurse on stage, and I'm still going to finish the freaking concert?
Yeah.
Yes.
Falling 8 feet, breaking his upper thigh bone.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh,
he
my
fell
gosh.
Off the stage. Broke his upper thigh bone. Roadie gave him the mic and said, "Hey, everybody, I think I just broke my leg. But we're in Sweden, and you guys waited a long time, so we're going to keep playing. Tyler, you're going to have to take over for me." And they did a bunch of covers, which they were already going to do.
Oh, my gosh.
They get him off stage. They set the bone.
Wow.
Wrap it back up, and then he comes out, finishes the concert. And he says, "I may not be able to stand, but I can still scream and play guitar." So he sat there for most of the thing.
I saw a picture of that. Him sitting there. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was just like, I mean, that guy is already, in my book, one of the most epic show people ever.
Oh, and just, he's got such a head on his shoulders.
Yeah.
I read an article once where he was standing in line at a record store. He went and like bought some records and stuff, and he went up there and went to pay. And the guy said, "Oh, your money's not good here. No, thank you for all you do." He's like, "Do you know who I am?" He's like, "Yeah, of course I do. And then he says, "Well, then you know I can pay for this. Like, you know I'm more than like, dude, pay for, give those guys the records for free. Like, I can pay for this.
Yeah.
Like, no, come on. Like, please have those guys have it." It was like, awesome. Like, good on you, dude. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
and
yes.
And then the garage concerts that he'll play for people. They just do random things. And then, boom, he shows up in your two-car garage with the band playing for the neighborhood.
Like, great. For 12 people and my cousin Ethel. Like, awesome.
Those 12 people think you're king shit for a while.
Well, because you are.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Good stuff.
Okay, and so for anyone noticing the audio quality difference. Maybe.
Yep, we'll see what we can do.
We're recording on an awesome iPhone.
Yes.
Four?
Five.
Five?
Yes.
Awesome, excellent. we could have been going on my Windows phone, but it's already almost dying.
Yes.
But what it still can do is pull up some of the questions and the Patreon backers. What are we looking at? Because I think we're doing good on the Oh heck yeah! This is gonna be great. This is longer than, well, no, it may eventually be longer than the first podcast where Andy and I were hoping we'd eke out 20 minutes.
Okay, and spoke for like 55.
Yeah. So now it's really hard to keep them contained. We had Tyler J. Hill on twice, Tony was on the 100th episode, but Tyler came on, and we were talking about the film community in Seattle.
Right.
With a no holes barred, we're not going to name names, but we're also not going to blow smoke up everybody's ass.
Yeah.
And that there are issues across all commercial, film, narrative, documentary, shorts, student, whatever.
Sure.
There are issues, and Tyler started, and I kept looking over my shoulder. I'm like, we haven't even answered the questions yet, and we're at an hour 45. Should we think maybe there'll be a part two? So then he came in part two, and I'm like, so is there going to be a part three?
Oh my
gosh.
We've
got like 2 hour plus episodes every time he comes on. And I hardly talk. It's Andy and, okay, it's mainly Tyler. Andy coming in a little bit, and then I get interjections every once in a while if it ever comes around to acting.
You're the Ed McMahon. Yeah.
You're right.
Yes.
And that's it. That's all I do.
Excellent.
But because a lot of these questions are specifically tailored to Andy and I this week, which is somewhat unusual, not the rule is what I wanted to say. I'm going to pick and choose some questions that we may get duplicates of when Andy and I return next week. But Dougie Sharp at the Potato Pope on the Twitters says, does being in the industry make it harder to enjoy big-budget popcorn films? Looking for critiques, not sitting and enjoying it, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah.
I would say to you, because I believe that it's thematic to what we've been talking about with rescoring and soundtracking and all that.
Sure.
How is that for you? How are you affected by knowing some of the nitty-gritty and how this stuff is done? And like we talked about, not wanting this, you know, the score to really stand out, and yet at the same time, so can you sit down and watch most movies, or do you have that little thing in the back of your head that's like, oh, I'm really in it? Oh, no, that took me out. That was too overpowering, or, you know what I mean?
Great question. Yeah, yes, I understand. I'm pretty selective with what I actually go see. Mm-hmm. I typically do a lot of screening beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. So I don't typically experience the, oh, no, they lost me. I can't do it. So because typically, like, what I'll go see is going to be arguably a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm.
So already. What I do experience a lot of is, and I'm sure you do this too, is a greater understanding of the finer points that other people wouldn't necessarily notice. Mm-hmm. Unless you're there, unless you're, you know, because you're on the inside and you've seen that done before or yeah. something, right? I mean, do you find that too? Like, if you're like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, they totally just, he totally just did this thing or something.
Fight scenes, I can't, I can still sit down and enjoy them.
Yeah.
But I know that this isn't a 5-minute continuous scene in most films. Yes, I know there's going to be people who say, remember that Korean one where they did all that thing?
Which is okay. Great, which is very impressive.
Well, yeah,
and which that's is. The anomaly.
Or True Detective that has a 6-minute continuous shot going through multiple houses and fights and all this stuff.
And that's incredible. Yeah,
it's and like, it is.
Wow.
But most of the time, I know that it's boom, boom, there's an edit. Okay, so they did one thrown punch. They were 6 feet away from each other. Looks really yep. badass. 3 days later, they did the next piece of... So that totally. I know that it's not, you know, this continuous thing. And I know right. that I've done stuff where... The star had to go back and shoot on Sons of Anarchy. So we're having a dialogue that was recorded 3 weeks apart.
Oh, there you
that
go.
That happens to be the same awesome sunny day in Seattle somehow. And even when I watch it, I'm like, wow, I don't remember talking to Michael Beach then. Oh, no, that's right. Because right. I did it 3 weeks later.
I wasn't actually talking to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So there are things like that, but... When I'm seeing Jurassic World or,
yeah.
you know, any of those, I try to watch now, case in point, Birdman.
Okay.
I was agitated for the first 20 minutes. I was watching at home. I was on relaxed.
Yeah.
And I found myself on the edge of the couch just really anxious.
Why was that?
Because it doesn't look like there was a cut. And I'm going, this is one continuous scene. Michael Keaton is... Give him the fucking Oscar because he is doing all of this. And they are doing camera moves that... Do you understand if someone at this point... And so I was waiting for that edit because someone was going to fuck up a line that they would need to then get out. And I was just like, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? Who's going to do... Hold it. The camera just went behind the mirror, behind Michael Keaton. He's looking in the mirror, and there's no camera behind it. Ah! My head exploded. Then I started seeing all the times that they passed through something dark.
Uh-huh.
Or someone washed across the screen. Edit. Okay. oh, now I can enjoy the film.
Okay, thank goodness.
But I look for those things.
Sure.
Sometimes actively, because mm-hmm. I just want to know how it's done.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, yeah.
So for the most part, it doesn't take me out unless it's bad. Like if I go see theater and I know that the lighting's bad because I designed lights.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you are not, especially in theater, I am that asshole now. I am just, it's really hard for me to go see most theater now, you know, for whatever aspect you want to say, you know, it won't hold water for me and I will just get frustrated.
Sure.
You know, either the whole cast isn't good or the sets aren't good or the costumes aren't good or the lights aren't good and I just want it to be awesome because I know what can be done with absolutely nothing.
And you know that from your experience and just kind of as your years of this is your craft, you've come around to be like, okay, well, as you said, like you should be able to baseline, I expect this, even for this budget, you should at least get this kind of, and then if it's not there, it's like, oh, guys, people, come on. So yeah, I think similarly, like, yeah, and we've come back around to the, if the music is distracting, you've lost me. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it needs to just be there. So, yeah, similarly. Yeah.
Battery's critically low. Thanks for telling me. Tim Martin has asked us a number of questions. Are you a Windows or Mac person?
I'm a Windows guy.
You excited for Windows 10?
I'm still on Windows 7 and happy as a clam.
Well, you won't be for long.
Okay, crap.
You'll get Windows 10 for free.
Don't care.
you will once you use it.
Oh, is it pretty?
Windows 10 will be all the best of Windows 7 and the best of Windows 8 shoved into one awesome operating system.
That sounds cool because Windows 8 scared the crap out of me.
Tim is bemoaning the loss of Windows Media Center, which will go the way of the dinosaur, and asks if there are any other viable applications to take the place of Windows Media Center for playback and streaming of audio and video.
Oh.
Do you have a home theater PC? Do you do any streaming via the
interwebs?
Yeah, see on a PC.
On the PCs?
Not like, oh, my Blu-ray player has the Netflix app and I stream Netflix to my TV.
No, because that's... But this is, hey, I have my computer hooked up and I'm going to go find this on the interweb. Yeah. No, I don't. No, not much at all.
I would say VLC player. Which is
yes. Also, oh, I'm familiar with that. Yeah. That VLC one works LAN.
Well. Video LAN something. But yeah, it's VLC.
Yes,
it's the one that has the icon of the safety cone.
Yes, that's right.
Yep. And I think it started out as an Apple platform product that then got ported over to Windows. I could totally be wrong, but that is my favorite. And for a home theater PC, Plex. Is pretty awesome, cross-platform, really integrates well with Apple products, but I have it on my, all my stuff is Windows, so I have a Surface, and I can be anywhere that there is, and I have the app, it was $4.99, have the app on my Surface tablet, okay. I could be anywhere with Wi-Fi, and I can stream totally legally appropriated videos on my computer at home.
Yeah.
And watch them wherever I am.
Wow.
It will stream because it makes the connection I have a Plex here, I have a Plex here, I'm going to shake hands.
Interfaces, and
there
you
go. And I can watch the Mythbusters Star Wars episode in Timbuktu because it's at home and because I have an internet connection.
Are you going to be filming Z Nation in Timbuktu, or what do you have going on there that'll drive you out that far?
Z Nation, I may be filming in Spokane.
Which, oh, okay.
Is question number 3. What's with Spokane bashing in episode 100? I know where you both live, and I, quote, know things. See if I cook dinner for you twat hats. sorry, see if I cook dinner again, twat hats. A, I wasn't bashing on the Spokane. B, as we've already mentioned, Andy had some issues growing up there. But yeah, I mean, it can be anywhere. I can be in Spokane, I could be in England, I could be in Timbuktu.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so that's an awesome piece of hardware for you there. I wanted to mention, and again, my apologies, Link Master General, you have your work cut out for you on this one, but Hawk Robinson, one of our newest Patreon backers, has an RPG, motorhome that he's trying to do a GoFundMe campaign for, because Hawk goes around and uses RPGs as a form of therapy.
Oh, nice.
For various states of being.
Yes.
And it's an awesome research project. I think we met each other 4 years ago at, like, SpoCon.
Mm-hmm.
But what this awesome trailer will allow him to do, and it's being, if he can get it, it's being custom built for him down in Arizona. Okay. So the GoFundMe is to start to make the initial payments on it and get down there in the gas and everything to get down to Arizona, turn around, and drive it back.
And get it back, yep.
But that way, it's going to be a mobile RPG, if you will, therapy station.
Yeah,
that
sure.
That he can go to various places instead of trying to find a library or someone's home or be invasive in those aspects.
Right.
He can take this stuff out there and do research. I think he got, correct me somewhere, Hawk, but I think a doctoral thesis on this stuff. It,
nice.
It's just amazing.
Yeah,
and
wonderful.
If I would have been way more prepared, and my phone would have been working, I would have pulled all that information up. But as it is, it may be crapping out soon, and I want to make sure that we get to thank everyone. So that is it right now. We're going to thank our Patreon subscribers, patrons. I'm not quite sure what we call you people.
Hey, you put S on the end of everything. Patrons.
Patrons.
That's your thing.
There we go.
Patrons.
And Steve is going to help me by thanking everyone. So I will start off, as I've said, with Hawk Robinson. Thank you.
Leslie Sedlak. Thank
Todd
you.
Todd McKimmy.
Zombie Orpheus Entertainment.
Trampas Johnson.
Gordon D. Duke.
Bo Pritchard.
Digby Davis, LLC.
Paula Moran.
And Amanda Cook.
James Herbert.
Matthew Hunt.
Tim Martin.
Rob McLennan.
Lotta Jerf.
Laura Adams.
Tom Brophy.
Tom Stewart.
Donald Evans.
Justin Everett.
Brad Roberts.
Jennifer Riffenberry.
Riefenberry. There you go. Rival guy.
And Chad Jones.
Thank you so much for your pledges of awesomeness. So just to stay informed with what that's actually buying, we're still doing the Adobe Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Bought a bunch of connectors for some equipment that we needed to do all of the additional audio commentaries that we're recording for the Blu-ray, Darkness Rising. So that came in very handy. Still working on the soundproofing in the studio. And that's about it. So, now the brass ones come out on the table. Steve Wolbrecht, have you ever listened fully through a Two Bards, One Mic podcast?
I have. I listened to one.
So, in honor of that, take us out.
Oh, I don't remember what the takeout is.
Okay. Neil deGrasse Tyson, if you're listening, we would love to have you on the podcast. And then tell Neil that he could explain something to me that I should know but don't.
Neil, you would have the opportunity to explain something to Scott C. Brown that he probably knows nothing about, but that he would sit there in rapture and listen attentively to you the entire time. So come on the show.
Good enough for me. Thanks, Stevie.
You're welcome.
Thanks. That's my stomach saying, that's
saying
all, folks.
Cut.
No,
good night.
No, cut.
No, cut. Oh, cut.
Yeah, just
hit the... Wait, I have to... Wait, what's my code?